This is WNZK, Newport Heights, Detroit, your ethnic superstation at 690 days, 680 nights.
This is Radio Bolity, broadcast every Friday here at WNZK Radio, 690 AM, hosted by syndicated columnist Ray Hanania, Ali Yunus, and Layla Al-Husseini. Get information on show guests and topics by visiting RadioBolity.com. We want to hear your views. Call in during the show by dialing 248-557-3300. Now, Radio Bolity.
And good morning and welcome to Radio Bolity. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690. It is Friday, March 8th. And again, I'm Ray Hanania.
And I am Ali Yunus.
And Ellie, were you doing a Debka just now when we were listening to that music?
No,
was that you pounding your feet on the floor?
I'm talking about the music of...
You're Jordanian, aren't you? Or you're Palestinian, but you have that Jordanian Debka. You know, you grab the scimitar at weddings. Did you have one of those at your wedding, a scimitar? Okay. As soon as I brought up the Jordanians.
Right. And there are many issues with Jordanian democracy. I think you should serve as a model to the U.S.
I don't know what it was, but they cut us quick. You know, I'm always worried about the Mossad interrupting our stuff. Now I got to worry about the Jordanian Mukhabarat. We don't have time to worry about the FBI harassing us. You know, when we carry knives on airlines, we're okay. It's okay to carry a knife on an airline, but you can't carry any water. What is that? Does that make sense?
Well, it's the regulations, the law, you know, chemicals and all. It's all liquids and all forms of liquids. It sounds redundant now, but in an atmosphere of fear.
Yeah.
You know.
But now they said you can carry a knife on a plane. Why don't they say you can carry water and ban knives? Why would you let somebody carry a knife on a plane?
Well, water is more dangerous than knives. You know that.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Let me just finish. Welcome to Radio Bolity. We're brought to you by Zia Brothers Importing, prominent Michigan accident attorney Jumana K. Ruse at JumanaKRuse.com, Jake's Candy, Icon Computers at MyIconComputers.com, and our radio partners like Radio Ramica. You can listen online by going to RadioRamica.com or by dialing 712-432-8008. Anytime, any place in the world, on your cell phone, you can listen to our radio show. And, of course, if you go to RadioBolity.com, you can listen online any place outside of our Detroit broadcast, Michigan broadcast area, WNZK, AM 690. Also, our partners include the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, Sabeel Media, MC Gold TV, and Life for Relief and Development, and also the Dearborn Free Press. And, of course, online with me is Ali Yunus. Yeah, I was asking about it. I was trying to do a little segue into our first topic by mentioning that, you know, that the Debka music was so strong, it made me think of the Jordanians, you know, the Bedouins, you know, in the desert dancing with scimitars in the air at a wedding.
Well,
you know, but
well, Debka is an Arab tradition.
That's
not
when
just
the Mukhabarat struck.
Not just Jordanians, you know, and
no, I know, I get it. But yeah. The Jordanians, they're the only ones that use a scimitar when they dance, don't they? Over there, you ever go to a Jordanian wedding?
Yeah,
couple, right?
Yeah, a couple.
They get up there with the big scimitar. It's very cool. A little dangerous though, especially when the groom has. Had a little bit too much.
Talk about the sword, the characters.
Yes.
But the golf, there's a famous Saudi dance called Al Arda. It's all about swords.
Our land.
No, that's different. You're Arabic. That's funny. Our land. I think, you know, a sword was a weapon, you know, and, you know, a pre-modern weapon, and still perhaps exists as a traditional symbol of Arab bravery, perhaps, in addition to camels and horses and other symbols of the Arab traditions.
Right. The LR, the Saudis dance that all
right,
the time.
Right, right.
I'm going to make a joke. Somebody's going to say, look, you can't even speak Arabic.
Well,
I know what LR is. It's a dance. The Saudis love it. And it actually, not just the Saudis, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, all those Gulf states.
Yeah, and for someone who works for the Saudis, such as yourself, you should get acquainted.
I mean, I can't make a joke, right?
Can't make a joke.
Problem in the Arab world, we're not allowed to make a joke. Like, you know, the one guy in the Jordanian parliament. Isn't that what started the whole thing?
Yeah.
When Zayed Shawakba accused the prime minister Abdullah Nasser of corruption. Wasn't he just being satirical?
Well, no. I think the many Jordanian, there are new ones. They're 93 out of 150. This is new to them,
right,
some members of parliament. And a lot of accusations of Jordan that, and some of it's true, that the Jordanian intelligence, the Mukhabarat, basically appoint those to office.
Let's be honest. Is Jordan a democracy, Ali?
No, it's not.
It's not, really, right. It pretends to be a democracy. They have a parliament. Even one of my relatives was appointed, you know, and ran for the Jordanian Senate. A great guy. I mean, he's a good person, obviously. But
Jordanian Senate is,
you know, that system is, they're not free.
The Jordanian Senate, the upper house, they are appointed by the king.
Right.
So, I mean, this is, you know, the notable.
But there's this false sense in the West that, wow, they have a parliament. They have members of parliament. They have the upper house, the Senate. Wow, they must be a democracy. But the truth is, they're not even close to being a democracy. And then the spotlight gets put on, as it was by this news story that you tweeted and put on your Facebook page about this Shadi El Edwan, right? The member of parliament who was annoyed with something that the prime minister said, and he was about, it looked like he pulled a silver gun. This is the second time a Jordanian member of parliament has tried to, you know, throw a gun into an argument. What is it about that?
Right, right. It's fascinating. Well, the first one was last year during a talk show on TV, debate with another former member of parliament. A current member of parliament at that time last year pulled a gun against the other one.
It was like a little cable TV show, right,
right,
in Jordan?
Right. This guy, Shadi El Edwan, you know, threatened to pull the gun. I mean, he reached to his gun, and you could see the pictures.
Right.
He reached to his gun. There's a gun, obviously. He's a member of parliament, and he has a gun inside the parliament. And so it is fascinating that why... I mean, we're speaking about gun control in America, taking guns from the hands of criminals. In Jordan, there should be a debate about taking guns from the hands of the members of parliament.
Members of parliament.
Yeah.
They should. You know what's interesting to me? Right now, the Jordanian Mukhabarat is trying to figure out who the guy was who took the video that put it on YouTube that ended up on Al Arabiya and other
it's all over.
Middle East media.
Yeah, but it's all over the... I mean, the...
Right, but I mean, don't you think that they're right now... But they probably got the guy. They're torturing him.
No, no.
They're probably waterboarding
him. I think the Jordanian Mukhabarat a little bit, you know, opened up after the Arab Spring. They allow a measured freedom of speech, a measured. That is, you cannot, for example... assault the king or insult the king without punishment.
Right.
But you could speak about the prime minister. You could speak, you know, talk about democracy. And I have written myself many critical opinion pieces about the Jordanian Mukhabarat, about the...
I know the Mukhabarat called me many times to ask about you. I play ignorant like El Ihu. I don't know.
Well, that...
El Arda, isn't that a dance?
Right.
About our land?
Right. So...
And then they shake their head and leave me alone, so...
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, speaking of the Jordanian parliament, I once went, I think it was last year, a friend of mine, member of parliament at the time, I was interviewing him for an article. So I made an appointment with him to go visit him at his clinic. He's a doctor. So he couldn't make it at the clinic, so he had his chauffeur, you know, take me to the parliament, to the House of Representatives there. So we went through, I mean, we parked the car in the garage, and we walked to his office. There was no security check, nothing. They didn't even talk to me, nothing. I could be carrying a rocket with me. No one would have checked me out inside the parliament. So
I mean, security in Jordan is pretty tight. I remember going through the airport. Right away they identified me as American, but they said, "But you're Palestinian, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I am." And I had an oud, you know, that I brought. Maybe one time I'll play it, you know, on the radio show. I'll play the oud.
So are you going to Jordan for?
I was going to a flower power. I was going to a hippie convention.
I thought it was going to a concert because I think you told me once you were like a singer somehow.
I did. I played great guitar and many of the great Arab musicians like Jimi Hendrix. You know, I think he's really deep down Arab.
Oh, really?
And so I'm going through airport security, and they go, "What are you doing with an oud? Palestinians can't play the oud." And they were like trying to insult me, and I said, "Hey, but I have an American passport." They said, "We don't care." And I said, "Jesus, I just left Israel. I thought I answered all those questions already. Now I got to go through the same third degree in Jordan,
well,
to leave to the United States." So I was afraid they were going to rip up my oath.
Yeah, when it comes to intelligence.
And all the mother of pearl, take all that.
Yeah, Jordan intelligence is very strong, very powerful because,
they're bullies.
Well, they're trained by the CIA, and they act in a lot of missions on behalf of the CIA. They have arrested, we will talk about it, Sulaiman Abu Ghaith, who's a Kuwaiti member of Al-Qaeda and bin Laden's son-in-law, who was arrested in Jordan.
Right.
And
I think it was Turkey. The Turks grabbed him, didn't they?
The Turks grabbed him and then shipped him to Jordan. They gave him a passport to go to Jordan. From there, he wanted to go to Kuwait. He's a Kuwaiti. But in Jordan, when he stepped in the airport, U.S. FBI and the Jordanian intelligence.
So the Jordanians are the ones that turned him into the U.S. That's interesting. You know, when you read the news stories, it's almost like they're trying to play that down.
No.
Do you think Arabs would be mad that it's Jordan that turned this son-in-law in of bin Laden to the U.S. for a... It's going to be a circus trial in New York.
Right. Yeah, but, I don't think Jordanians or any Arabs will shed any tears over a Jordanian, given... this guy up. I mean, he's not Jordanian citizen one. Even
right.
He was, the Jordanians will probably happily, give their citizens away to anyone
right.
who wants them, as far as if they were criminals. He's a Kuwaiti citizen. The Kuwaiti government revoked his citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure if that's legal or not, because he's, not naturalized Kuwaiti citizen, but they, took his citizenship away.
Right.
And so he...
Well, he was a terrorist, wasn't he? The spokesman with bin Laden. He was with bin Laden, I think, on September 11th during the interviews celebrating the attack on the World Trade Center and everything like that. So he was a marked guy. But was he a military guy or just a loudmouth, ally of his father-in-law?
Yes, he was not militant. I mean, from the U.S. perspective, it doesn't matter whether you carry the gun or not. I mean, they prosecuted...
Right.
Bin Laden's cook, the Yemeni guy, if you remember.
Right. Well, they let the driver go.
Yeah, so if you were a driver, a cook...
They arrested the driver, and then they let him go. He did a movie about
it. Yeah, after many years, but it doesn't matter. You were his partner or his groomer. It doesn't matter. You were associated with Bin Laden.
Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, we moved from the Jordanian to the... bin Laden's son, but there were topics we wanted to talk about, but we can go back to the Jordanian one because that's interesting. But let's talk about this trial. I mean, they're going to do a trial of bin Laden's son-in-law in New York City. I mean, what is that about? All of a sudden now we're going to start doing trials in New York? I thought we just tortured and waterboarded everybody we arrested, in Guantanamo and tried to prevent them from... having a trial because we don't want them to be spouting all this stuff. I'm not saying I'm in favor of it, but what's the change?
Well, I think, the venue in New York, it had to do with September 11 being in New York,
right.
you know, the site of the Twin Towers, and that's why the legal venue, and it's the federal court there. But I think it also serves political purposes for Barack Obama. Stuff on terrorism, he prosecuted more terrorists, than George W. Bush. He continued to have Guantanamo Bay opened up.
He captured and killed. Well, he didn't capture.
Yeah, he killed Bin Laden.
He killed Bin Laden.
Yeah, so
and Bush could do it.
You know, Obama actually, to me, I think he had done more when it comes to terrorism, whether you agree or disagree, more than George W. Bush would come.
I think so too.
And more secretive than George W. Bush.
Well, I think Bush's strategy was very simple. You know, when you have the terrorists out there, it's easy for you to then argue that we're going to compromise American civil liberties. But once you start capturing the terrorists and putting them in jail, the threat's not out there. It makes it very hard to compromise the Constitution of the United States. I think Obama is, you know, his approach is different. You know, he wants to support the Constitution, and he doesn't care. Let's arrest all these guys and do something with them, whereas I don't think Bush and Cheney really wanted Bin Laden. I think they liked him out there because it served their purposes.
Well, yeah, I disagree. I don't think they liked Bin Laden out there. I think he was not a top priority for them. I mean, it does not justify to put the entire national resources behind one guy. Whereas
but he was the leader. It was like going after Hitler during World War II.
Yes.
Yeah,
after Hitler, but you fight the larger war. The strategy was to fight the larger war. You know,
we didn't go after Bin Laden. It was like we gave up.
Well, it was
under Bush and Cheney.
It was not political priority as to the resources to kill Bin Laden.
Isn't that what the problem is then with Bush and Cheney?
Well, even if you killed Bin Laden, and Obama killed Bin Laden, even if it was killed under George Bush, you still have Al Qaeda. You still have the school of thought that it represents. You still have the affiliates, the branches that, you know, spurs up in Mali, in sub-Saharan Africa, in the Sahara, in the North Africa, in the Middle East. You still have those influenced by Al-Qaeda. And so killing Bin Laden does not end the issue. Just like when you killed Hitler, it ends with the Third Reich in Germany.
Right.
So it didn't work out.
Well, it's true. I mean, you know, the Nazism continues and neo-Nazism today. It doesn't matter that Hitler took his own life, you know, right after, you know, the collapse of his initiated war. But let me ask you a question about this, the arrest of Bin Laden's son-in-law. I think his name is Suleiman Abu Ghaith.
Yes.
You know, he's described as a militant. He was in the videos, you know, with his father-in-law, Osama bin Laden, that were broadcast right after the September 11th attacks. You know, he was a screamer. He was a yeller. He was like a typical loudmouth fanatic, you know, just saying all kinds of things. Now they arrest the guy, and this is important because most of the stories don't say he was arrested in
Jordan.
Jordan. They say he was arrested in Turkey.
Well, he was arrested in Turkey first.
Well,
he was arrested in Turkey first.
Well, they turned him over to the Jordanians.
Yes, he turned them over.
But not everybody's mentioning that. I guess the point I'm trying to ask, and wonder if you think this is irrelevant or not, but are the Jordanians sensitive to the fact that they're the ones that turned Suleiman Abu Ghaith over to the United States?
Well, no, because it was a joint operation between the Turkish intelligence, the U.S. intelligence, and the Jordanian intelligence. Turkey did not want to turn Suleiman Abu Ghaith directly to the U.S. because under Turkish law, he did not commit any crime in Turkey, didn't have any terrorism operation against Turkey. The only violation was he entered Turkey illegally from Iran because he did not have a passport. He had a forged Saudi passport going into Turkey. And from there, he wanted to apply for political asylum in Turkey, which he was denied. So from a Turkish perspective, the guy is innocent as far as committing no crime against the Turkish interests.
So, but then the Jordanians and the FBI went after him, right? I mean, they're the ones that pushed this.
Well, yeah.
I'm wondering that the Jordanians were the driving force in trying to arrest this guy, Abu Ghaith.
Well,
do you think it's irrelevant?
No, I don't think it was a convenience.
Will it have any backlash against the Jordanians at all?
I don't think so. Jordanians arrested another terrorist who was from Jordanian, I think.
Right.
His passport expired, and they told him he can, I forgot his name, but he can get a temporary passport to come to Jordan. And they gave him that in Pakistan. When he stepped into the airport, they turned him over to the CIA right away. He didn't even go into the ground. So Jordan act on behalf of the CIA when it comes to global terrorism as an ally of the United States. So it's not nothing unusual. It's not a secret even.
All right. Well, we got just to remind our listeners, you're listening to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we're talking about, Bin Laden's son, Suleiman Abu Ghaith, who was arrested and is going to be transported to New York, where he's going to face trial in a federal court just blocks away from the World Trade Center September 11th terrorist debacle. We also were talking a little bit about the Jordanian member of parliament who, in a debate, an argument, very heated, had a silver gun that looked like he was going to try to pull and wave. And that's the second time we've had guns with Jordanian parliament members. The other one, as Ali Yunus pointed out, was at a cable TV show where he first threw his shoe.
Gun in the parliament, not a one with Ali Yunus.
He first threw his shoe. You know, the other member of parliament threw his shoe, then threw the tables, and then grabbed the gun and started waving it in a debate. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we have a couple other topics. We got Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, a big supporter of Palestinian rights, who passed away. He died of a heart attack, I think, but he had cancer. But I think it was a heart attack that actually took his life. And then we also have segregated bus lines in Israel, you know, in the West Bank for separating Jews and non-Jews, you know, because the settlers don't like to sit with Palestinians. You know, when you steal somebody's land, you don't want to have to look at them every morning when you're going to, you know, sell the stolen produce, you know, on the Israeli market. So, you know, I know how tough it must be for those settlers. You know, I'm very uncomfortable for them. So let's talk about that. Let's take a break. You're listening to Radio Ballady. Our website is radioballady.com. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
It was my job to save people. Until one night, I was in a car accident. I couldn't work, and the insurance company, they fought me every step of the way. I didn't know what to do.
Call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
I'm Shumana Kairouz. I know what it's like to be refused. When you call, my attorneys and I will fight to get you the compensation you deserve.
Shumana handled my medical benefits and lost wages, and she got me a settlement.
If you have been injured, call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
Jake's Candy, 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي بوك ريجل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I am Ali Yunus.
And we were talking about the Jordanian member of parliament who, in a heated debate, was going to pull out a silver gun that you could easily see in the video that was sent all over the news and the internet this week.
They should search and them. They should search these member of parliament before they go.
Maybe they're too important to be searched, you know?
I think they are.
How dare you search me?
I think they are.
You know, there's an arrogance, isn't there?
I think they are armed and dangerous people, really. I think I would be afraid to go to meet with them.
Well, I mean, listen, it just seems a little odd that they would allow people to bring weapons into the
U.S. Congress, imagine.
I wonder if, listen, I remember it was, I covered Chicago City Hall for 18 years. Several times, aldermen would have guns on them. You know, several aldermen. One time, the alderman went to the bathroom, took his gun belt off, put it on the toilet. When he got up, he forgot to grab the gun belt. So some little kid went into the bathroom and came out holding this big gun belt that belonged to one of the aldermen.
So
it was like a little huff.
Wow.
Hmm?
Wow, that was in the 70s maybe or 80s?
Yeah, that was. Actually, that was, I think, when Harold Washington was.
Yeah,
there.
That was, so in
it was in the 80s.
Yeah, that was in the 80s.
Early 80s. Yeah. The olden days,
yeah.
As my son likes to refer to them.
Right, right, the olden days. But speaking of Zayed, you know, I just remember.
Speaking of old people, you. No, go ahead.
Yeah, you promised me to send me. And Leila Hosseini promised me to. Well, I'm starting a vegan diet. You know, 2-3 days out of the week, I want to eat vegetables only, no milk products, no meat products, no cheese, which is great. I thought maybe I could plug myself in into 2-3 days.
Well, I'll tell you what, you have to listen to Leila Hosseini's Good Morning Michigan every morning, and she gives away boxes of Ziad Brothers products. All you have to do is tell them where you've seen one of their Ziad billboards, because in Detroit, when you ride around Detroit, you see hundreds of Jemana Kairouz billboards.
Send me an email where are the locations of the billboards. And I can,
but I'll be cheating. I'd have to go to Detroit and see them.
Wow, that's pretty costly. Just,
just get a couple jars of hummus. But it's worth it.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, those, that Ziad food is, you know, the big talk today is that Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, yeah.
And Middle Eastern food is, you know, the cornerstone of the Mediterranean diet. And, you know, a lot of people are really buying hummus. And,
you know, I see Sabra hummus commercials on TV, and I see but they're not Arabic, are they?
No. I think they're Israeli.
So, and I see falafel boxes, and I see, you know, couscous boxes made in Israel. Israeli falafel.
Oh, yeah. The Israelis, in addition to stealing our land, they've been stealing our food for years.
Wow.
You ever go to Ben Yehuda Square on Ben Yehuda Street in Jerusalem?
No, I've never
really occupied Jerusalem.
No, I've never been there. They
have a falafel shop that's one of the best, and he's Arab Palestinian. I don't know how he survives
in
at the bottom.
Jerusalem?
He says a lot of people won't eat at his shop
in West Jerusalem.
In on Ben Yehuda Street, yeah.
Okay, I'm sure. I want to go there and check.
At the very bottom of Ben Yehuda Street, I know I'm not telling a secret.
Yeah.
You know, now the Israelis are going to go and boycott them.
Send me an email with all your Israeli friends so I can meet with them.
Listen, Israelis as a people are nice people. They just are afraid to speak out. That, you know, a lot of them are cowardly. They won't stand up and say what needs to be said. You know, it's like they have their heads in the sand. They don't want to speak out against the violence and the civil rights abuses and the racism in their country. They'll let other Israelis discriminate against Christians and Muslims who want to live in places like Gilo, the illegal settlement. They'll kick you out of that community if you're Arab.
Yeah.
You know, discrimination is brutal.
Well, many Israelis don't even know what exists in the West Bank and Gaza. And in fact,
they close their eyes and ears, don't they?
There's a lot of propaganda. But when I saw Guy Davidi with five broken cameras with Imad Brunat, he showed that movie about the suffering of the Palestinians in the town of Belayin to Israeli children, school children. They were shocked. They cried. They said, I want to show it to all my school. They were ashamed that Israeli soldiers who thought they idealized all their lives as, you know, heroic
heroes.
Yeah,
right.
As heroes. And they were shocked to see that those soldiers and Israeli government people who represent them, you know.
And that's why I say there are a lot of Israelis, I think, that are good, though, you know, I mean, this isn't about being Jewish or even Israeli at this point. I mean, listen, the world's changed. 65 years of occupation, you know, in Israel and Palestine and no solution. I think, though, that the Israelis, there's a reluctance on their part, and that's the big problem with Israelis. And as a people, they just don't want to fess up to the nasty things that their government does. They want to pretend like it doesn't exist, and it's horrible.
That's true. You know? That's true, but also at the same time, you know, the nasty things that Israeli government is doing is not counter... you know, being countered on the Arab side by productive, more productive actions. In fact, the Arab world is disintegrating. Egypt is in chaos.
Right.
Syria is broken apart. And the Gulf region, the rich region, it has a lot of political weight now. It has nothing to do with the Israeli, Arab-Israeli conflict no more. They're more occupied with the conflict with Iran or the threats or the perceived threats from Iran. So... And who's facing the Israeli actions? And part of the Palestinians are very weak, disunited, obviously. And
right.
They face uphill battle when it comes to Israel, which is supported by the administration of Barack Obama and the other administrations before, and it will be after him.
Right. He's going to be Barack Obama is going to be going to Israel to get some Israeli-made hummus and falafel to bring back to the White House.
Right.
You know, so the First Lady asked him to give him a whole shopping list of Mediterranean diet foods.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So he's not going to do anything. He's not going to talk about Middle East peace while he's there. He's going to be in a shopping trip
with
his wife.
He learned his lesson.
He did learn his lesson. They beat the heck out of him.
Chuck Hagel learned his lesson. He will meet with Ehud Barak at the first meeting.
Yes, he's crawling to the Israelis, practically. They beat the heck out of him, too.
Well,
it's like, boy, you got to give those Israelis credit.
Well, it's
not
Israeli.
For all the terrible things they do, they really have the power to beat us up, don't they?
Well, it's not Israelis. It's, you know, Senator John McCain, Lindsey Graham, you know, the Republicans, the Tea Party people, the Ted Cruz, you know, who's a Cuban.
They're like mercenaries for the Israelis.
You know, Ted Cruz is a Cuban-American. I mean, I thought... You know, the way he uttered words and he, you know, interrogated Chuck Hagel, I'm listening to a member of the Israeli Knesset, you know.
Wow.
Because they were so harsh against him on behalf of Israel, of all countries, you know, and that's strange. And now AIPAC, you know, we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
They are drafting a resolution committing the United States, non-binding, but to draft resolution, which will, in effect, raise the level of debate in this country that in case Israel attacks Iran, the United States should come to aid Iran, Israel militarily, economically, and politically.
Wow.
Which means...
What does the Congress think about that, or they don't matter? AIPAC really is the Congress.
But that would be congressional resolution. So AIPAC drafting the legislation for Congress.
They had like 300 members of Congress at their AIPAC meeting. I think it was a violation of the Open Meetings Act. You know, that more members of Congress go to an AIPAC meeting than they do go to a meeting of the Congress. Some of them don't even show up, like Luis Gutierrez. The guy shows up only 7% of the time.
Yeah, your friend, Luis Gutierrez from the Democrats.
Well, he's a big friend of Israel. He takes money up the wazoo, you know, from Israel and the Israeli PACs and stuff like that. Yeah, I think... You know, I mean, it's amazing to me how the Israelis have mastered the fine art of control and influence.
Well,
I mean, for example, even Obama, he says he made a point. He told Jewish leaders, he just met with American Jewish leaders. There's a news story on CBS. He just told them, he said, listen, don't worry. I'm not going to bring a peace plan to Israel.
Yes.
They were worried about it. They're going to, you're not going to be telling Israel they got to make peace with the Palestinians. He says, no, don't worry about it. I'm not going there to bring peace. I'm just going to go there to, you know, just check the place out. You know, I am president of the United States, but I know how far I can go.
Well, do you remember Jesse Helms, Republican from North Carolina?
Yes.
A conservative, very conservative Southern North Carolinian, very anti-Israel when he started his career. The Israeli lobby, the pro-Israeli lobby, worked with him over the years and converted him to an ardent supporter of Israel. So he started off as a conservative base, which means
money will do a lot.
Right, but he opposed giving aid to Israel. From a conservatives don't like to give foreign aid. you know.
No, I meant the donations to Helms from the Israeli lobby. They poured money into his collection.
But also worked with him. You know,
what are we, Arabs, poor? We don't have money? Is that it? We're poverty-stricken? Don't Arabs are the richest people in the United States?
They don't get involved. They don't vote for...
You don't get involved. It's our fault, isn't it?
You know, our listeners are Michigan. Who are the two senators from Michigan now?
Carl Levin, and he's retiring. I think Jemana Kairouz should run for the Senate. We have to get a high profile Arab to run for the Senate, in my opinion.
Well, yeah.
Allie, you going to move there and run for the Senate?
No.
Go ahead. Your point you were making about high-profile Arabs, right? How many are there in one of the largest concentrations of Arabs in the country?
There are members of Congress who happens to be Lebanese-Americans. Daryl Issa, right. Republican from California. Yeah. Nick Rolfe, Democrat from West Virginia. And I forgot who was it.
Daryl Issa, I think, is a part Syrian, isn't he?
You know, I don't know. Syrian and Lebanese are the same thing, I think, right? I mean, Lebanese might be offended by saying that, but I think...
Right. No, I know. I understand the politics of the region.
Yes. But it doesn't matter, really.
But your point is that, you know, we have all these, our populations in Detroit, the Detroit region, in the Chicago region, and what do we have? We have nothing.
Remember when Miriam Zaid ran for school board?
Yes. We ran her election three times.
School board. We're not talking about that.
We couldn't even win anything. Couldn't even get the Arabs, really energized.
On an election for a school board. We're not talking about, you know, the Illinois House or the Illinois Senate. We're not talking about a national office or even a statewide office. We're talking about maybe county-wide office. You cannot get any Arabs to support Miriam Zaid at the time. And I remember...
And we couldn't get any Americans to support... A lot of Americans. I mean, our vote was very low. And she was the most qualified candidate to run for the school board of all the candidates.
You ran for something, I remember.
I ran for the Illinois House when I left the Sun-Times. But not because I expected to win. But I'll tell you, I came close to winning. But the coup de grace that killed my campaign was when my opponent sent a letter out in 1991, I think it was, 92 election, that said Ray Hanania isn't just a Palestinian, he's an Iraqi.
Oh, really?
Now, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it was the Gulf War at the time.
Yes, it was at the Gulf War, but the idea that, he's not just a Palestinian and an Arab, he's an Iraqi. Like there's some difference, between, an Arab is an Arab. But it really, and my vote dropped. I lost by, I think, about 1,800 votes out of 70,000.
Well, you could have been a president of the United States because Barack Obama started his career running.
Yes, he
did. You remember he used to come to our candidate nights, Barack Obama and everybody else's. You went there,
and nobody paid attention to him or Michelle.
And nobody really cared, because he was a
who knew?
Yeah, who knew? But David Axelrod, came, and everybody else's came, and who became?
Isn't that a good? Isn't that the point though? Then about this country that we don't realize that the power to change this country is in our reach. That all we have to do is run for office, organize, put our money together, and make a difference. Our community doesn't realize that a guy like Barack Obama could have been me sitting at a radio, talk show, running for the legislature, gets into the Illinois legislature, then becomes a congressman, and then runs for president of the United States, all within a matter of 10 years. How does he do that? And we can't?
Well, it takes a lot of money, but it takes a lot of effort. But also,
Rashida Tlaib in Michigan, I hope she runs for Senate in Michigan. She's a legislator from a very small Arab constituency, but large African-American constituency. She's a great legislator in Michigan. I think maybe that's what we should do. We should push her to run for the Senate in Michigan to take Carl Levin's place.
Well, I hope the Arab community supports her with donations and vote and volunteers. That's what it takes. Hopefully she makes it. If she doesn't make it, at least she establishes a precedent, at least – someone from the community is trying to reach out there, and she doesn't have to represent Arab issues.
Well, listen, we were going to talk about Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, but we got to take a quick break here at 40 minutes after the hour on Radio Bellity, WNZK AM 690. Our phone number is 248-557-3300. We want to talk about Hugo Chavez and also segregated buses in Israel. I mean, Rosa Parks. I replaced my picture on Facebook with Rosa Parks' picture.
I can see the resemblance.
Can you? Can you see it? We're both oppressed people.
Right, right.
We're both oppressed. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we're going to take a break here at Radio Ballady. And when we come back, we'll continue the discussion. Hugo Chavez, Rosa Parks, sad to have the two of them in the same conversation, but two big issues. And segregated buses, what's new in Israel? We'll be right back right after these messages.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Puck, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
If you get into a car accident, how will you pick up the pieces when you can't work, when the bills pile up? Who will help you? Call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
I called Jemana. She took care of everything. My medical bill, lost wages, and even a large settlement.
I am Shumana Kiruz, and I assure you that my team will not stop until you get the most for your rights.
If you've been in a car accident, call Shumana, 866-YOUR-RIGHT.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي باك ريجل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we're talking about a lot of different things. I think we were talking about the Jordanian member of parliament who drew a gun in a debate. That's the second time a Jordanian member of parliament has gotten into an argument with waving a gun. And we were also talking about, you know, a couple other topics. The arrest of Osama bin Laden's son-in-law by really in a operation headed by the Jordanians and the FBI to grab him from Turkey, bring him to Jordan, and they're going to be holding him on trial in New York City sometime later this year, possibly, or the beginning of next year. And Hugo Chavez, Ali, why do we care about Hugo Chavez as Arabs and Palestinians or people from the Middle East? Ali? Oh, did we lose Ali? I want to make sure we're still on the air here.
Okay, I'm still on.
Oh, good,
I'm
okay.
I pressed the wrong button. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I thought, oh, man. No. See, listen, every time we say the word Jordanian Mukhabarat, something happens on the radio show.
Oh, I know, right?
Where James is going, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, well, you see, even in America, a lot of Arabs are afraid of the Arab world Mukhabarat.
Yeah, we are.
Even some,
but look at their reach all the way from Amman, Jordan. Even some, they can't bring us democracy, but they can interrupt our radio
even
show.
Even some Arab journalists are afraid to write or talk about
yes, they
countries.
Are.
You know, I am not one of them, so you know.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you worry about going through the airport in Jordan?
No, I've never, and I've written...
they don't know who you are?
No, I've written extensively about them, but I think, I write in English. And,
right.
But
so they don't understand?
No, they do understand, and I write about them, but, you know, I'm, you know, I don't write in a sense that insulting manner, you know.
No, I
analyses are, you know, mostly objective, and I try to defend the people, but without, you know, try to insult this figure, that figure, because that's a futile. You know, that's not my point. I'm trying to.
Well, why? Well, let's go to Hugo Chavez. Yeah. Why do we care about Hugo Chavez?
Hugo Chavez, was very popular in the Arab world for several reasons. One, you know, his style is populista style. He's a populist figure. He's like Jamal Abdel Nasser. He's like Gaddafi before that. You know, all these leaders who speak to the masses.
Che Guevara.
You know, Che Guevara. But speak to the masses. And there is a connection between Latin American populations, poor, undereducated at the time, dictatorships.
Right.
And they crave this leader who would, you know, especially would represent and help the poor. Much like
right.
Jamal Abdel Nasser did in Egypt. So he was very popular.
Right.
But in addition to that, he helped a lot of Venezuelan people. Venezuela, maybe one of the world's largest oil producers.
Right.
So he used that wealth to help.
And I think there's another factor. You know, my relatives lived in Venezuela. A lot of Palestinians. Yeah, a lot of Palestinians lived in Venezuela. All of my mother's side from Bethlehem. A lot of Palestinians from Bethlehem and the Christian Triangle went to Venezuela and lived there after the Israelis took over in 1948. And then in 1967, there was a big migration to Venezuela, and they became big business people there. And I think that he was always very close to Palestinians in Venezuela, because I know that these relatives were very involved, you know, in supporting the government leaders in Venezuela.
Well, I think Hugo Chavez, being a socialist leader, he naturally was against the United States, against Israel policies.
Right.
And
right.
He's the only one who severed relations with Israel after they invaded Gaza in 2008 to 2009.
Right.
So that made him very popular. And for that,
but was he a brutal dictator, though?
But I want to finish this point. But for the Arab world, he was the only one to sever relations. Hosni Mubarak did not cut off relations with Israel. Jordan did not cut off relations. So only Venezuela, which is thousands of miles away, non-Arab, non-Muslim, non-whatever you want to call it, you know, took the bold step to cut off relations and stood up to the United States. Those are factors that, you know, made him very popular in the Arab world, because, you know, there's a receptive toward this kind of leadership, you know, the populist leader who speak, you know, directly to the masses. It reminded them, I think, in my opinion, with a long bygone era of Jamal Abdel Nasser and others who,
right.
you know, who made, you know, pronouncements against Israel, against the West, against United States.
And he did it under the umbrella of Arab nationalism,
yeah.
which I thought was very important, and we don't hear much about that anymore.
Yeah, and that's why, you see, Hugo Chavez was a friend of Ahmadinejad and Iran, because their policies intersected when it comes to their shared...
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes.
Let's go to the phone line and welcome Jamal on. Quick comment, Jamal, because I got to take another break here real quick, but if you're there, Jamal, how are you?
How are you today? Good morning.
Pretty good. What do you think? Hugo Chavez, hero?
I mean, we have to evaluate leaders of countries by what they do and what they did if they are passed away to their people. Now, when you have somebody like Chavez holding different point of view about other countries like us, like Israel, like the ever. That's beyond and above our ability as somebody who didn't live over there. I think somebody like Chavez took control over the natural resources of that country and used those natural resources to benefit the people who own those natural resources over there. And that's what made him very likable and very effective in elevating poverty and elevating, and social justice in that country. If we compare him to our country here, the corporation last year made $1.7 trillion in this country, while we have 17, 18 million people not working.
Well, that's called capitalism and a free enterprise, my friend Jamal.
And Hugo Chavez did nationalize all the big foreign assets in their country. Jamal, I got to let you go because we're really running out of time here. But I appreciate the call, Jamal. Seriously, thank you for chirping in there. Real quick, Ali, we'll finish off the topic on Hugo Chavez. So he was He championed Palestinian rights, didn't he? Whatever
well,
his personal
Palestinian
fault
Palestinian
as a
rights,
leader.
But also he championed Venezuelan, the poor segment of the population in Venezuela's rights, just what Jamal said. So,
right.
And also he championed Arab rights. But for the most part, he stood up to the United States. And that, you know, it says a great deal about the U.S. policies in the region, that people would support whoever stands up to the United States. And that's why...
You don't think he went too far, like when he criticized Bush? Do you remember when he made those comments about Bush? And I got to look him up.
Yes. Well, George Bush was criticized by American people more than Hugo Chavez did, you know, against him, because for his invasion of Iraq, for his disastrous economic policies in the United States.
Oh, he called him a donkey, I think. Yeah. He called George Bush a donkey and the devil.
Yeah, George Bush doesn't care. I mean, American president has been called many, many other names and more harsher names than that, so they didn't go to...
Well, why make Chavez worse than the rest, then? Why is he the worst?
Well, because...
Because he just stood up to us?
Well, yes, for one, from American perspective, you know, he cut off relations with Israel. He nationalized Venezuela's oil wealth. There's a lot of big interest, you know, U.S. interest, economic interest in Venezuela. And Latin America has been the backyard of American influence. So he cut off the American influence of Venezuela, and he helped Cuba. That was a big factor, helped 100,000 barrels of oil free to Cuba or at deep discount. And he also helped other socialist countries or socialist leaders in Latin America, such as Ecuador, Brazil, of course, a big country run by socialists. So the trend in Latin America was going against the traditional pro-U.S. stance by having all these socialists in Venezuela, in Brazil, and, of course, Cuba, but in Ecuador, in Uruguay, and in Argentina as well.
All right. You're listening to Radio Ballady. We're going to take another quick break. I'm Ray Hanania.
I am Ali Yunus.
And when we come back, we'll continue the discussion, this time with the buses in Israel and the West Bank. We'll be right back right after these messages.
The American Muslim Center works for the community. It establishes goodness, virtue, and develops relationships between the Muslim communities as well as regional and national non-Muslim communities. The American Muslim Center on Outer Drive in Dearborn. Call 313-565-9314 or visit AmericanMuslimCenter.org.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products, because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
It was my job to save people. Until one night, I was in a car accident. I couldn't work, and the insurance company, they fought me every step of the way. I didn't know what to do.
Call 866 Your Rights.
I'm Shumana K. Roos. I know what it's like to be refused your rights. When you call, my attorneys and I will fight to get you the compensation you deserve.
Shumana handled my medical benefits and lost wages, and she got me a settlement.
If you have been injured, call 866 Your Rights.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي باك ريجل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. We only got a few quick minutes. Why isn't anybody upset, Ali, with the fact that Israel is separating in an apartheid-like manner Jews and non-Jews on buses from the West Bank in and out of Israel and the West Bank? Why is it being treated like, okay, it's an interesting story, but never the same level as it would be if Rosa Parks were told to sit in the back of the bus. An Arab can't even sit in the back of the bus.
Well,
in an Israeli bus, they have to have their own buses.
Well, yeah, it makes a great point in the West and in America specifically, but from the Arab perspective, really, Palestinians are not fighting to have equal rights with Israelis.
Right.
Palestinians are fighting to end the occupation and to be free from any Israeli. They don't want to sit on the same bus or to be in the same area with Israelis. They want their own separate state. So to fight, you know, to have equality on the bus, that is to say, I accept the occupation. All I want is just to have equal rights under the state of Israel.
So it's not about equal rights with Israelis, then?
Not.
And is that part of the reason why it's not taking the same?
At least in the West Bank. Now, Israeli proper, we're talking about Jerusalem, Jaffa, Haifa, all the Arabs that exist there. I think, you know, Arabs, you know, fight for equal rights there. They want the same level.
I get that, but you're saying that the point is that the priority isn't Palestinians fighting to have equal rights with Israelis. It's Palestinians fighting for their rights.
Yeah.
You know, to be treated as human beings and to have rights to their land that Israel has taken.
And to end the occupation, you know, plain and simple. That's it. They want the Israelis out of the West Bank, out of Gaza completely.
Well, don't we want more? I mean, don't we want, if you support two states, okay, then all we want is an end to the occupation and our own freedom. But many Palestinians are saying, hey, why don't we just have one state where Palestinians and Israelis live as equals in Israel or whatever you want to call it?
Well, yes, some people are saying that. The Palestinians are arguing that because they say, well, we have a majority demographic numbers, and eventually we'll become the rulers of the land. But that's a false analogy, in my opinion, because, you know, Israel is the dominant culture there. They're the dominant, they have the strongest army in the region and perhaps in the world as well, one of the strongest in the world. They are a very strong economy, stronger than the economy of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, all of these combined. Without even oil. So I see it's very difficult for the Palestinians to think that eventually we will become Israeli citizens and eventually we'll rule through the Knesset. So Palestinians will run through the Knesset.
Right. And
Israeli army as well. So,
you know, it sounds harsh to, you know, I mean, a lot of Americans go, oh, geez, here's this talk about racism and everything. But the Israelis are very racist. I mean, a recent poll this past October found that many Israelis would like the segregation to go even further. But in the American media, like the Washington Post, it doesn't call it segregation as they would have, you know, under South Africa apartheid. The Washington Post uses the term alleged segregation on the bus lines. But the Israelis are saying, hey, we want to, and 74% of Israelis said that if Israel annexes the West Bank, they'd want separate roads for Jews. They'd want the Arabs to use different roads. They'd want the Arabs to live in different buildings. They want a separation of Arabs and non-Arabs in the West Bank and in Israel.
Well,
if the West Bank is annexed, I mean, that's the most abhorrent kind of racism out there, and yet Americans are silent. They don't care.
Because they use the word segregation, you know, it harkens back to the political memory of what happened in the United States with the black and white issues. So it is a very explosive term to use when it comes to Israel, because it puts Israel, you know, it likens Israel to the racist past in America. And they don't want that image to be stuck on Israel as a racist country, and by extension it becomes like South Africa, which is very negative. So it's a PR, I think, move on part of the press not to use the word segregation, and Israelis don't even use the word segregation.
When a newspaper like the Washington Post says alleged segregation, you really got to wonder about the bias, how deep it really is.
Yes, I mean, the Washington Post is pro-Israel, and they're not hiding that. The New York Times.
That's true. We have to go. Unfortunately, I'm sorry that we got to cut this off. But I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Younis.
And this is Radio Ballady. We're here every Friday from 8 until 9 o'clock. Rashida Tlaib for Senate. That's my new war cry. I'm going to write some columns on that. Let's support her, Allie. Yeah. Let's do what we can to get her in there and get her to be a senator.
Let's talk about her next time in our show. Next,
I think we'll bring her on and launch her campaign.
Yeah.
Let's try to do that. All right. Listen, everybody, have a great time. Remember, go to RadioBallady.com for information and to download our podcast. James, thanks for all your help here at WNZK AM 690. Have a great week. Talk to you later, everybody. Bye-bye.
WNZK.